Good evening and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Carol High, a member of the club's Asia Pacific Affairs Forum and your chair for today. We also welcome our listeners on the radio and we invite our audience to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. Now it is my pleasure to introduce a special person who has generously offered to be with us tonight to introduce our speakers. Australian Consul General Nigel Warren.
Thanks, Carol. Truth be told, when I got the invitation, it was very easy for me to say yes, so thank you very much. Good evening and welcome. As Carol mentioned, my name is Nigel Warren. I'm the Australian Consul General here in San Francisco. I get the privilege to represent Australia in this part of the world, and I couldn't think of a better part of the world than San Francisco. So I'd like to welcome you to the discovery, the diversity of Australian wines this evening. I wanted to say thank you very much to the Commonwealth Club. Thank you, Carol and Sylvie, very much for hosting the event this evening. I've got a lot of respect for the Commonwealth Club. I think the programs that you put on are absolutely fantastic, and it's great that we're able to showcase premium Australian wines here this evening. Just as way of introduction, I would like to introduce Team Australia that's here this evening. My organisation is the Consulate General, but it's also the Australian Trade Commission, and we're able to work with Australian companies to promote business around the world, but also work with US companies to invest in Australia. So Linda Tom, who's part of my team, is here this evening. She gets the best job in my team in that she gets to work on Australian wine promotion, so it's good to have Linda here. Mark Davidson, who's representing Wine Australia, is here, and he's going to walk us through and educate all of us on the great Australian wines that we've got here this evening. And also I wanted to welcome Nicole Costa, who's a sommelier from Mandarin Oriental and an expert on Australian wine. Just to give you a little bit of background on Mark, he spent over 15 years as a sommelier, and he also writes for a variety of different publications, and is our homegrown expert on Australian wine. To give you a little bit of a background on Wine Australia is the Australian government's statutory authority that was established in 1981 to provide support to the Australian wine industry around the world. They run a number of programs throughout the United States, and this is one of them, so it's great to have Mark here, and I'm ready to learn a lot this evening, Mark. Just to give you a little bit of background on Nicole, Nicole has been the wine director and sommelier at the Mandarin Oriental since 2008, and she was born actually in a well-known region of Australia, which is the Barossa Valley. So I think you have like a head start on everybody, Nicole, from birth. So it's fantastic that Nicole's here to be able to team up with Mark to walk us through some fantastic Australian wines. Mark and Nicole are going to lead you through a discussion of eight Australian wines that are regionally specific classics, and we're going to have a discussion about those wines, Mark, and enjoy them. I just also wanted to say that there's going to be a little bit of small tasting along the way of some food as well from Executive Chef Rick Bartram's California Cuisine. So, Mark, I'm going to hand over to you. Welcome. It's great that the Commonwealth Club to do the event this evening, and we're in your good hands, Mark, so thank you.
Thanks very much, Nigel. The food, I think, has already been eaten.
Mostly.
My first understanding here is that you guys do these get-togethers a lot, but how many times do you get wine? Not often. Is that why the tickets sold so quickly? Okay, so why are we here, and what is the... Bugger. I'm a guy, I can't multitask. The job I get to do, I worked as a sommelier, but I was approached by Wine Australia a couple of years ago to come and work in the United States. I'm temporarily living in Canada, I'm just about to move here. To come down and do some work with particularly the sommelier trade and the retail trade and consumers, but primarily focusing on the gatekeepers, to sort of shift the perceptions of what had sort of essentially happened to Australian wine. And if you ask around the room, probably here or just about anywhere, what do you think of when you think of Australian wine? Probably Shiraz. That'd be a fair statement. Maybe you might say the word Yellowtail. Is that possible?
Hopefully not.
I have to be careful. Which is a good thing. I think what Australia did, so to sort of deal with the elephant in the room, if you like, what Australia did extremely well when nobody knew anything about Australian wine, if you remember the old Monty Python skit about Chateau Wagga Wagga, does anyone remember that one? Wines to be laid down and avoided. That was the 70s, and Australian wine was not really known. And what we did do in the subsequent couple of decades was bring to the world varietally correct, very easy to drink, sort of sunshine in a bottle kind of approach. And I think we've always done that really well. We continue to do that really well. But unfortunately, the market got flooded with that style of wine, especially in the US and maybe in the UK, you could argue as well. And so the impression of Australian wine became one of down here, which is a wonderful place to be as well. It's a successful, commercially successful place, but at the expense of over 150 years of unbroken tradition of fine wine production. It's kind of a shame when you stop and think about all the great things that are going on. You're going to try some wines tonight that are made from 80-year-old vines, and there are some wines in Australia that come from vines, some of the oldest Shiraz vines on the planet, and I'll deal with that when we start talking about it. So when you think about that sort of legacy and tradition and history, and yet what people think about with Australian wine is sort of cheap and cheerful, sunshine in the bottle, now I'd like something serious, that's a problem. So that's what we're trying to sort of get around and shift. And so I thought the beauty of this is that, and I mean, you've probably said it yourself, and I'm sure you've heard other people say it, is that I love Australian Shiraz. Yeah. When did you ever heard someone say, I like American Cabernet? They at least say California. They mostly even say Napa, and they, even if they don't know much about Napa, the point is there's a regionally specific connection to high-quality wine in Napa, and Australia's got that too. We just don't talk about it. Australia's a quarter, you know, about 4% smaller than continental US. It's a big country, so when you say you like Australian Shiraz, it's like, wow, what kind of Australian Shiraz? So so we're trying to sort of push this message that there's all manner of different wine styles, and that's kind of why I've picked a range of crisp white, refreshing, crisp and refreshing whites, through to some full-bodied whites, and a range of lighter-bodied reds, through to a classic Shiraz as well. So something you'll be comfortable with. But anyway, let's do a little bit of. You've got to earn this glass of wine. This is gonna be the longest wait for a glass of wine you've ever had. So, quick perspective. It's not. There will be a test in about an hour when I'm finished my lecture. I'm just kidding. We'll make this quick. But I think it's important to remember some of these little key points about when the grape. There were no grapes in Australia. They were brought into Australia by the first settlers. Okay. Okay, they were convicts, but it's a moot point. There's a couple of. I don't want to get into too much technical stuff, but it's kind of interesting because it relates to a lot of history in Australia, in that. The big push came when a guy called James Busby went back to Europe in the 1830s, collected about 650 vine species and brought them back to Australia. Anyone been to the Botanical Gardens in Sydney? Anyone been to Sydney? That's where all the plant material went. And so all the original vines ended up in the Botanical Gardens and made its way to all these other parts of the world. Right about the 1860s, a vine pest went all around Europe, where he picked up a lot of these vine clippings from, and went around and destroyed all the root, through the root system, destroyed all the vineyards of Europe. The cure was actually an American. The American rootstock is now planted all the way through Europe. But phylloxera has never been in Australia. So some of those vines that went in the ground in the 1840s are still there, still producing. So the irony is some of the oldest Shiraz, Grenache, Mourvedre, which are all European varieties, the oldest versions of those anywhere on the planet are actually in Australia, not in Europe anymore. So now the French are coming to us looking for cuttings of original vine material, which is kind of like selling ice to the Eskimos. We love it. That's not to say it's better or worse or whatever. It's just different. It's interesting to look at the history. So then, as I mentioned, it's 4% smaller than continental US. In fact, I often take a map of Australia and turn it upside down to give you a bit of an idea. Pretend that pointy bit's Florida. Sometimes it's effective, sometimes it's not. But the point is that it's about the same size as the US. If you go from Perth on this side of the country, on the left side of the country, to Sydney, that's like LA to New York. So there's some serious distance there. So to talk about climate range and all sorts of other things that go on in Australia, it's like saying, what's the climate like in the US? Well, it's different. One thing is consistent. That middle bit, it's always hot.
Dry.
And dry. So there's officially 60-odd what we call GIs, or individual specific wine regions, and that's a constantly evolving piece of the puzzle. So, and to sort of pinpoint in one area, what does, you know, Australia do really well in this region? Usually a lot of varieties are planted, and then certain varieties are now becoming star performers. If you look at Barossa, there's all manner, where Nicole's from, all manner of great things grown in Barossa, but when push comes to shove, you'd have to stop at, say, Shiraz and Grenache as being the famous varieties. Not to say there isn't Semillon and a few other things going on there as well. So Major varieties, because if we give you a full list of what's being grown in Australia, you would be here for an hour. I'm not going to do that. Riesling, Semillon, Chardonnay, Shiraz, Cabernet, Pinot, and Grenache, and that's what you're going to try tonight. In fact, we've added one to that one because we've got a Sauvignon Blanc, rather. So, Riesling. I've taught wine classes for many years. I taught for WSET and the Sommelier Guild, and I used to tell my students at the first class, of the first session, I'd say, if you do not like and learn to appreciate Riesling before the end of this program, you will not only fail the program, you will not be successful in life in general. Riesling, I think, is one of the great varieties, great white varieties on the planet, and the history in Australia, up until about the mid-80s, the most planted high-quality grape for wine production, period, red or white, was actually Riesling. So we've got a long tradition of it. So without getting into too much detail, what do you need to remember? It's dry in Australia, with some rare exceptions, because the image of Riesling around the world is typically, oh, it's sweet, therefore I better, you know, avoid that. Aussie Riesling, you could have two of them today. You do not leave the room until you've tried these. Okay? You do not pass go. You don't collect any food. So they're fantastic. They're crisp, they're dry, and they're wonderfully refreshing. I think I can't sort of recommend them enough. I think they're fantastic. And, you know, Nicole working as a sommelier, I mean, I'm sure that's a great go-to variety for you when you work.
Great for pairing with food. Yeah. So. Good acidity, great minerality.
But you've eaten all the food, so it's too late for that. And we've got one from Clare Valley and one from Eden Valley. And just to give you a bit of an idea, look, they are regions. They are specific regions in different parts of South Australia. And, in fact, one of the wines today you're going to try comes from that vineyard. You can taste the contours in it. Not quite. But it's very famous. This vineyard was originally planted in 1860-something. Then through some economic difficulties and what have you. But since 61, it's been planted to Riesling ever since. And you think, wow, that's quite a good tradition of old Riesling. Delicious stuff. Semillon. There's different sorts of styles. And the Hunter Semillon, which you're going to try today, is extremely unique style. Has anyone ever had Semillon from anywhere on the planet? Probably not. A few of you? Generally speaking, it's a little fatter and a little richer style, but the way this is produced, it's and sort of flies in the face of people often saying to you, oh, Australian wines are alcoholic and full-bodied and rich. This is 10%, maybe 10.5% alcohol, which I appreciate the older I get. You could have an extra glass or two, which is an important thing. But crisp, dry, light, refreshing, and in fact, you can age these, and they turn into something extremely different. And they're not even sometimes interesting, some versions of them, until they're about 7, 8, 10 years of age. And they age beautifully. And these are light-bodied, crisp, and refreshing wines. They're fantastic stuff. Yeah. And oysters, oysters, oysters.
I challenge anyone to find an old Semillon and not think it's fabulous. It's one of my
really
favorite
tricky
wines.
Yeah.
Full stop.
In fact, I do a program with a bunch of sommeliers here. And at the end of the program, they talk about the things that really captured their attention. 75% of them write about Hunter Semillon. Because they're like, wow, this is the most unique and amazing style of wine.
I think I did that, did I?
Yeah, you did.
It's
you
bad
did
essay, though.
Yeah. It was close.
Bad writer.
So Hunter Valley is north of Sydney. If you've been to Sydney, the region that's closest to Sydney, so obviously it gets a lot of traffic, would be the Hunter Valley, about an hour and a half, 2 hours drive. So it's obviously sort of, I like to say it's like the Napa Valley, but not quite, but it's a decent comparison. And Chardonnay is, I didn't think when I started working very closely with Australian wine again, because I was working with the world of wine in my previous life, that the thing I'd come out of 6 months later was the most exciting thing happening in Australia was modern Chardonnay, but it is absolutely the case, and I think it's fun to have a look at. We're going to try one today. The old style, without a doubt, was made to draw attention to itself. It was deep, dark, and golden. You guys that have... anyone grow up on a steady diet of California Chardonnays from the 80s? You know, you're picking splinters out of your teeth with so much wood. We had the same problem. Lots of pineapple flavors, lots of oak, and that has changed completely. All little techniques that people are using to make Chardonnay are being brought back a little bit. And frankly, the grapes are being planted in a much cooler areas, which is exactly what's happening in California. For your high-quality Chardonnays, they're in cooler regions with a little bit more restraint, because Chardonnay is a very adaptable variety. But I defy you to have, you know, Dungeness Crab and a good bottle of top Australian Chardonnay and not be sort of blown away and get a bit lightheaded by it. But, you know, who's said in this room or heard people say, I don't like Chardonnay? Have you heard that? I'm too scared.
I say it all the time.
Yeah, do
you? This one's good.
The problem with it is that Chardonnay, when you think about it, it's a really easy thing to say. What we are tired of is badly made Chardonnay that's too oaky. But if you think about some of the great wines from around the world, from Burgundy and from other places, I mean, Chardonnay is really – I make my jokes about Riesling, but Chardonnay is one of the most amazing varieties that can age into something that is just, I think, untouchable. It's fantastic. So,
Just to add to that, I know a lot of people don't even think about Chardonnay in Australia, and I had one of the top sommeliers in the city send me an article the other day by email, knowing I'm Australian, about Australian Chardonnay being one of the top up-and-coming wines out there. And he's like, did you see this? This is crazy. This is amazing. I'm like, yeah, you haven't heard? Australian Chardonnay is really fantastic. He's just like, oh, this is just really great, Nicole. I'm going to go out and buy some. I'm like, good. Do it.
No, it's true. I think in the industry we've known for the last 4 or 5 years that's where the exciting things are happening in wine and for white wine in Australia. But now, if you had Chardonnay sort of 10 years ago from Australia, it was very pineapple-y and very sort of big and full, and it's just changed a lot now, so I think it's fun to have a look at. And there's just some areas that I mean, boy, Chardonnay's grown everywhere. If you were to say, where does Chardonnay grow in California, you'd be hard-pressed to stop it at even 5 or 6 regions. It's grown everywhere, so it's very adaptable. But if push comes to shove, I would be looking at Adelaide Hills, which is where this is from. It's cooler climate, a little bit of altitude. Yarra Valley, and then over on the far side in Western Australia, a place called Margaret River, which is fantastic as well. You're going to try wine from, I could lie and say it's from this vineyard, but it isn't. It's from a vineyard very close. This is Adelaide Hills. Give you a bit of an idea of the lay of the land. That sits at about 500 metres, which for in your terminology and your very antiquated system that you still persist in using, would be about 1,500 feet. 12 to 1,500 feet. So it's a bit of altitude, which you know, changes the temperature of growing and what have you, and that's the vineyard there. So that's actually a Chardonnay vineyard in Adelaide Hills. It's not actually where this is from. I could have lied, but I just feel bad. Now, Shiraz we do know about, but there's more to Australian Shiraz than I think even most of you are thinking in the room here, in that there's a diversity of styles, but the beauty about it is that we've got this wonderful heritage of old vines. There's the one vineyard that's planted in the Barossa. The Freedom Vineyard at Langmuir was planted in 1843. It's probably the oldest Shiraz vineyard, still producing, probably the oldest Shiraz vineyard on the planet. I don't think there's anything else out there that even comes close. So, and that's one of a few that are spotted out through. And there's places in all parts of Australia with 100-year-old Shiraz vines, which is a fantastic legacy. Now, does that mean because it's 100 years old, it's so much better? In some cases, yeah, there's production things that make the wine higher quality, but it's just nice to taste a slice of history. I mean, something's still growing and producing something interesting over 100 years of age. It's more than we can say about ourselves. But diversity of styles, and what we're going to look at today is a McLaren Vale and Barossa, which are the two sort of warmer climate regions, which typically going to get for Shiraz, you're going to get a fuller, richer flavour. But if you were to head to some of the cooler climate areas in Victoria and different parts of the country, you're going to end up with something that's a bit more savoury and peppery and a little bit more restrained, and I think that they're fun to look at too. But, you know, it's nice to have that diversity. So, you know, what I think would be great is that if we can get people to just say, hey, I love Barossa Shiraz, like you say Napa Cab or California Cab, I think we're getting somewhere. So, you know, we're going to try McLaren Vale today. So when someone says, do you like Australian Shiraz, do you mean like McLaren Vale or Barossa? Then they'll wonder what you're talking about. But Barossa, this is Nicole's domain. It's a fantastic place with a lot of old and old Grenache vines on top of it too. But, I mean, mm-hmm. It's a wonderful spot. And an interesting German heritage there.
Indeed. Yeah. And of.
It's fantastic. Lots of good sausages. And here you can see some really old vines in a vineyard in the Barossa. That's a Kalimna vineyard that Penfolds owns. And, just really old sort of, that's probably a vine. That's probably sitting at about 90 or 100-year-old vine there. I don't know why people, when they take photographs like that, they polish a couple of berries. I find that always kind of interesting. A photographer gets in there, polish a berry up there. Grenache. This is something. Who's ever had a straight Grenache from Australia? Anyone? Australian in the room? I love it. This is something I've gotten so excited about over the last few years, is that typically Grenache was sort of took a back seat. It was a variety that ended up going into blends, which is a good thing in some cases, and also into port production. We've got a long history of port production in Australia, which we're not going to deal with today. So it got relegated, if you like, to sort of bulk production or port production. And now what people have done is realized, well, hang on a second, we've got 100-year-old Grenache vines. The one you're going to try today is from an 80-year-old vines. And the style is really interesting because who likes Pinot Noir? Who saw Sideways? Everyone saw Sideways, yeah. It was a funny film, huh? Yeah, I loved it. The wine references are fantastic. There's so much for Pinot Noir, it's not even funny. But to me, it was uncomfortable. It was like really about two middle-aged guys stumbling through life. It was a bit close to home for me. but it changed people's perception about a lighter style reds. And I think Grenache, you might think, is a big and full body. And it certainly is fuller than Pinot. But stylistically, there's a producer in Barossa that calls it warm climate Pinot. He says it's rich, it's full, it's spicy, but it's mellow at the same time. So you have to try that as well. I think I think Aussie Grenache is exciting.
Yeah.
And that vineyard right there, that vine was planted in 1889. Still going. Beautiful stuff. And Cabernet, obviously you guys living where you are living here, you're pretty much in about as close as you can get in a major city to Cabernet country. Australian Cabernet is very, very good as well, and certainly doesn't command the prices that Napa does or have the history of reputation, or sorry, it has the history but not the reputation, but very interesting styles to have a look at. And if you think about two major regions, and certainly Cabernet has grown in a lot of areas in Australia, Margaret River and Coonawarra. So if you're thinking Cabernet in Australia, we're going to try Coonawarra wine today. But I do think one of the good things about it, not to sort of beat the drum too hard, is that value for money in Australian Cabernet, our top Coonawarra cab, I mean, you can pay wine, there's one or two wines up there, about $100 a bottle. For $40 to $50, you can get an absolutely top-notch version of Coonawarra cab, which is saying a lot because that's not that easy to find in Napa, I would argue, huh? Although prices are coming down beautifully now, aren't they? Some benefits to this economic crisis. yes, think meat. Cook it, probably. Not a bad idea. but Margaret River on the far side, over on the Western Australia, which is a relatively new viticultural area compared to some of the other areas sort of started in the late 60s, early 70s. And that's the railway station in Coonawarra. There's no internet hookup. But, yeah, anyway, Pinot Noir. Probably not the first thing I would think that anyone thinks of when they think of Australian wine. And I think it's maybe 10, 15 years ago, I talk about Australian Pinot Noir with very specific producers in mind and say, you know, try this or try that. Now, go ahead and experiment and head to some of these cooler climate areas of Victoria and Tasmania. There's some fun to be had. And we've got a wonderful wine from Mornington Peninsula, which is a little peninsula that juts out. Kind of next stop, you'll bump into Tasmania on the way, but Antarctica. So it's all cool ocean breezes. There's not one vineyard that would be further than about 7 kilometres from the ocean, which is about 3 miles. Are you ever going to change the system? It's time, don't you think it's time? Metric makes sense. Mornington Peninsula, Yarra Valley, basically in and around Melbourne. Someone's been to Melbourne. I was talking to someone. Who's been to Melbourne? Pretty much around Melbourne, there's a bunch of viticultural regions that do all sorts of things, but that's Pinot Noir country now. And then heading down to Tasmania, the climate, generally speaking, in Tasmania for grape growing would approximate to the cool climate of parts of Burgundy and Champagne. So we're talking, you remember, south of Tasmania, Antarctica, that's the next stop. So a lot of cool ocean breezes. And the wine you're going to try comes from that vineyard there. Isn't that gorgeous? And we can't leave without looking at the Tasmanian devil. Isn't he cute? And the reason I put that up there is not just to go, oh, but that's kind of cute, though. But we did a study, and this is what tells you about regional Australia. We did a study and sent it out to the average, I think it was an American in the UK, to say, of these regions, which do you know for wine production in Australia? And guess what? Which one came out on top? Tasmania. And I guarantee that none of you in the room have probably even had a Tasmanian wine. I think it's all to do with the Bugs Bunny cartoon and that Tasmanian devil. I swear it's about as simple as that, because there's something about that. And that's the guy in the background's a retailer we took down to Australia last year. And we look at this group of guys, sommeliers, and they're all excited. We're going to Tasmania. And they don't even know why. But I don't know. We're just going to Tasmania. There's something about Tasmania that is really appealing to people, and I don't know what it is. But that's the Tasmanian devil. Very cute, huh? Okay, now, not there's any ground rules, but you need to grab a glass because it's difficult to drink straight out of the bottle. It's not really polite either. So grab some glasses around the room. Nicole's going to be at the red wine table here. We've got also, and certainly if you've got questions now, by all means, ask them. I'm happy to answer them at the table here. But do not leave the room until you've had a glass of Riesling.
There are the smaller white wine glasses and larger red wine glasses, so pass by the table, grab one. Thank you.